Thank you very much, Rabbi Turk. So we're going to start by discussing the issues that you might come across when you are a rabbi somewhere and you have a Sefer Torah that looks to be potentially problematic. You're in yeshiva, you're used to new, beautiful Sefer Torah with nice black lettering without any cracks or anything whatsoever that doesn't look like a problem. That's not always the case. If you go to especially an older congregation that has old Sefer Torah, you might have many problems that you encounter, both if you stop just look at the Sefer Torah and in the middle of the laning, which is, of course, worse, because then you had much harder to fix. One major problem that happens with old Sefer Torah is that the ink turns reddish, or brownish. And the problem with that is very simple. Of course, the Gemara says that Halacha L'Moshe MiSinai, that Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzos have to be written with Dio, which is, what's Dio in normal Hebrew? Ink. Ink just, no, Dio nowadays just means ink, but that's not what it means in the Gemara. It means carbon black, lamp black ink, which is made of soot, which is black. So the Machlokas Rishonim, this. So that type of ink that was used in the times of the Gemara never ever turns red, because the ink is made with soot. Literally, soot is carbon. Soot is black intrinsically. It never ever turns brown or red. But the problem is that somewhere along the course of history, they started to make ink for stam out of what we call iron sulfate, which is made of iron. So what does iron do? Iron rusts. So that is basically what you're seeing when you look at an old Sefer Torah and you see that it's turning brownish or reddish. So this is a major problem, because Halacha L'Moshe MiSinai is that has to be written with Dio, which is, according to some Rishonim, it actually means that it has to be written in lamp black with the soot type of ink. But the way we paskin is according to the Rambam, who says that it just has to be a black permanent type of ink that the Sefer Torah is written in. So the problem is, now your Sefer Torah is not black, in fact, anymore. And if it's just a little bit grayish or something like that, a sort of light black looking, so according to most shitas, that would still be okay. But if it's actually turning brown, then you have a serious problem on your hands. Yeah. So that's sublook to a machlokis from amongst the Achronim, the Chasam Sofer as a tshuva, where he says that as long as it was written in a black permanent type of ink, and it's just the nature of that type of ink, which was kosher when it was written, and that it turns red, not red, but brownish later on, so then that would be okay. But other poskim don't like that at all. They say once it has to be, the Sefer Torah must always be written in black ink, so there's nothing really to talk about. So really, that should be fixed if at all possible. So the only problem is, what happens if the entire Sefer Torah is turning brown? And you can't really have a sofer, it's not really usually worth the investment to have a sofer go over the entire Sefer Torah again with black ink. So then you have to figure out whether there are other Sefer Torah available, or you have nothing, no choice but to rely on the poskim that permit ink after it's been turning brownish. But again, if it's just a few letters here and there, so it should definitely be black, if at all possible. The question is, what type of ink do you, in fact, need to use? Does every rabbi need to have on his shelf the ink that a sofer would normally use, or not? So there are nowadays, we have little inventions which are called ballpoint pens, which are much easier to carry around and to fix things with at a moment's notice than quills and official sofer's inks. So the question is, are you allowed to use this type of ink that's in this pen, for example, in order to fix a Sefer Torah? So, the issues with that would be as follows. So, according to some shittas, the ink that's used for Sefer Torah needs to be min hamutar beficha, needs to be made of kosher ingredients, which, of course, the klaf and other parts of the Sefer Torah, the gidim that used to sew it together, have to be made from kosher animals. So, it's a big question whether that applies to the ink as well. So, first of all, does regular ink have non-kosher ingredients? And B, doesn't matter if it has non-kosher ingredients. So we try to be machmer and divsiv at all possible. In fact, many contemporary inks have an ingredient which is known as shellac. And shellac is made from the secretions of an insect. And according to many poskim, it's not kosher. Of course, Rav Moshe Feinstein thought it was kosher. Other poskim thought it wasn't kosher. In any event, so that could be a little bit of an issue. I was told by Rabbi Schneid, who works in the Bell School of Jewish Music. He teaches the courses on Sefers here in YU. And he said that this pen, this Pilot ballpoint pen, does not have any non-kosher ingredients. Okay, he claims to have researched it, so therefore, if you want to be a little machmer, so you can try to get this type of pilot precise ballpoint pen, which you can use for fixing Sefer Torah in the absence of actual Sofer's ink. The Gemara says that you're supposed to write Sefer Torah with a kone, with a reed pen. So does anybody do that nowadays? Yeah, some Sephardi Sofrim, especially in Israel, do still use reed pens to write Stam, but nowadays Ashkenazi Sofrim more or less use quills. So it doesn't say anywhere they're supposed to use a quill to write a Sefer Torah. Why did they use quills? Because in Europe, that's what they had. They had geese who had feathers, lots of feathers, and they made quills out of those. They didn't have bamboo or reeds or the same way they had in the Middle East, so therefore they used quill. There's nothing wholly intrinsically about a quill. There are some poskim who express reservations about using a metal tip to write a Sefer Torah because they're afraid that it's going to scratch the parchment before the ink actually goes on, and therefore you might have some sort of a shayla of ksav al gabi ksav, which you might know from Maseches Gittin, that's going to be some sort of writing on the bottom, and then you're going to put in the ink on top, and it might be a shayla of ksav al gabi ksav. So whether that really applies over here is very questionable, and it's also questionable whether, in fact, that's true. If you check the metal pens that they make nowadays, they don't scratch less than quills. Quills are very sharp. More than quills, I'm sorry. The quills are very sharp. They actually scratch the parchment quite a bit. So if quills are okay, so presumably metal pens are okay also. This is also brought up in Hilchos Gittin, where it says, I believe the Ramah says, you're not supposed to write a get with a metal pen, but some later poskim, the get pushed it, and others say that it's perfectly fine to even write a get with a metal pen, where machmer in general in practice not to write get in with metal pens, but in any event, there are certainly many poskim that all metal pens, including the Keses HaSofer. The Keses HaSofer was written by the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. It's one of the major Sfarim on Hilchos Stam. It's like a practical guide that every Sofer needs to know before they get certified to be a Sofer. So he writes that there's absolutely no problem whatsoever with metal pens. And especially in this case, where you're just using a pen with a metal tip like this to make minor modifications to the Sefer Torah, and actually not actually writing the Sefer Torah with a metal pen. So especially when you're a rabbi in an out-of-town place and there might not be a professional sofer around, and it might be actually a kula to try to use a quill and ink, because you might end up spritzing it all over the place. So it's a lot of times it's more it's just going to be better just simply to use a ballpoint pen. If you want to get really fancy, there is a wonderful invention nowadays, which it needs a little bit of expertise to use, which is called Dio Lanetzach. And Dio Lanetzach, you can Google it. It's an ink that's made in the same way they used to do it in the times of the Gemara, with soot, actually, so it stays black forever, but it was invented by a physicist who lives in Scranton, Pennsylvania. So he used all sorts of modern chemicals that weren't available in the times of the Gemara to create an ink that's supposedly indestructible. So it's waterproof, it bends, even if you bend it, nothing happens to it. So he has a special version of this, which fits into a rapidograph art pen, which is like a pen with a cartridge that you can fill with any type of ink. So if you want to get a rapidograph pen and you want to fill it with a special Dio Lanetzach that's made for rapidograph, that is very advisable as well. That's for sure it has a hechsher, it's for sure kosher. This does not have a hechsher, obviously, although we assume it's probably kosher, even if you assume that you need minamot b'ficha for ink. And if you can use that, that would be fantastic. And certainly if you can get your Sefer Torah, if your congregation's ordering a new Sefer Torah, or you're getting mezuzahs for the shul, and you want to have it written in this type of ink, you usually have to make a special order, but that would be great. It's going to last much longer. Yeah. It certainly needs to be l'shma. Before you begin writing, you're supposed to say L'shem Kedusha Sefer Torah, or whatever you're working on. If it's a Megillah, obviously, the same type of thing. If you don't forget to actually verbally declare that it's supposed to be L'shma, then it's still okay, because if you're actually writing on a... first of all, it's a machlokes, because we showed him whether you need Dibor at all to create L'shma, or thinking is sufficient, and therefore, here in this, it's even better, because you're not just starting... If you have a blank piece of parchment in front of you, you could be starting to write anything, and you forget to say L'shem Kedusha Sefer Torah, that could be more of a problem. Here, the Sefer Torah is written already. You're fixing it. Of course you're doing it L'shem Sefer Torah. It's not a shayla. So if you forget to declare it verbally, that would still be okay. But definitely needs to be L'shma. But again, it's hard. It's going to be hard to create a situation where it's not going to be L'shma. Any knowledgeable person, you're not supposed to... A rabbi should certainly be knowledgeable enough to fill in a little bit on the Sefer Torah. I mean, to actually start writing... The Achronim are very makbid that you need to have what's called a Kabbalah, which is to take a Befinah by a rabbi and get a formal certification to actually be a Sofer. But for these types of minor repairs, any knowledgeable Baal HaBos should be able to do it, or certainly Kal Vachomer, a rabbi. Yeah?
Can it be a katan?
No, it cannot be a katan. Have to be godel, has to be a man, has to be,
Jewish,
of course, yes. So, Shomer Shabbos, obviously, okay, whatever. So, the another issue that's going to come into play when you might have to fix minor things are cracks. That is, when you don't have these fancy newfangled inks like the Olah Netzach, and you have these old, brittle, iron-based inks, so you're going to have, if you, say for Torah, when it's used a lot, when you roll it, when people might not be so careful, they might bend the urea a little bit, they might, the Baal Koreh might spit on it, while in the course of laning, and it might wipe away a little bit of the ink, so you might have a problem that the letter has a crack in it. So the question is, first of all, is this a problem? So that's actually Machlokas Rishonim as well. We normally assume that every letter has to be one golem echad, it's called. It has to be one unit of ink. If it has a break in it, that's a problem, with the exception of hey and kuf. So hey and kuf, the later poskim say, have to be Dafka separate, the legs from the top of the gag. Otherwise, it would be a problem if they were in fact connected. From the Gemara, this is not at all clear. The Gemara says that Sofrei Dafkani, that the super Makbid Sofrim used to separate the leg of the hay from the gag. And so it seems that it's not an absolute halacha. That was only the Sofrei Dafkani that used to do this. But in any event, we're Machmir in general, at least lechatchila, we'll get to it in a few minutes. If you come across it on Shabbos, that the hay or a kuf is connected. But normally, we assume that all the letters have to be actually one piece of ink. So, if you have a crack in a letter that's not so sensitive to cracks, so for example, you have a vase like this. You have a vase, and there's a little crack in there. So it's not so much of a problem. You wouldn't have to take out a new Sefer Torah on Shabbos for that because it's still clearly recognizable as a vase. There's no problem at all. But if you see it on a weekday, it should absolutely definitely be filled in. And that, again, that doesn't require a professional sofer. You can do it yourself. But sometimes you have letters that are much more sensitive to cracks. So for example, you have a mem like that. So you have a serious problem because this could be read as a chaf and a vav. So if you have a mem that has a crack like that, it could be puzzle. Some poskim are makel if they're so close together and arranged in such a way that a tinok, that a little kid, would read it for sure as a mem. We'll get to the rules for the reading of the tinok in a second. Others are machmir even with the slightest break. But again, this should definitely certainly be fixed. Another example of that is tzadi. So let's say you have a tzadi. And if not attached like that, it could look like a yud and a nun. Maybe that's not the best drawing of what a broken side looks like, a yud and a nun. Or a gimel could be, to have a gimel, it could be a zion, and then just a little thing like that that's meaningless. So you have a letter that could look like another letter if there's a crack, then you have more serious problems. Yeah?
I could take a ballpoint pen and put it in the Torah and just fill in that crack.
It feels weird, yeah, but
I don't have to get the special ink.
I said it's better if you get the special ink and you know how to use it. I'm saying if you don't know how to use it, or this is all you have in a pen, it's in the middle of a laning on a weekday, so it's better just to fix it right away.
Okay.
Especially, like I said, that the mostly Sefer Torah, especially not the newfangled ones that are written with newfangled types of ink, so the old most Sefer Torah is still written with the iron sulfate type of ink. So if you have Sefer Torah that are written with that type of ink, so anyway, it's relying on the shita that any black is kosher as dio. So you're not really losing that much by using this ink, unless you hold it a chashash of mutar b'ficha, because it doesn't fully have a hechsher. But again, we assume that this particular pen is not, can't take personal achrayas, but that's what most people assume, that this type of pen is in fact not a problem. Another issue is that if letters are touching, the Gemara says in Menachos that if two letters are touching, that each letter has to be what's called mukaf gvil. We don't use gvil, we don't have time to explain what that is, but we don't use gvil most of the time nowadays for Sefer Torah, but it applies to any material that the Sefer Torah happens to be written on, that every letter has to be completely surrounded by parchment. That applies also if you have like an endecha, for example, that's at the bottom line of the Sefer Torah, and there's something, and the endecha was, I mean, usually supposed to have more margin than this, but assuming you don't, the endechaf was written all the way to the end of the parchment, that at the bottom of the endechaf touches the end of the parchment, there's no space joining the bottom of the endechaf, or the same thing as a lamed on the top, then that would be a problem as well. That would have to be fixed by erasing the offending area. That and if it's a shem Hashem, then that would be the more of an issue whether you could in fact erase it. So you'd have to ask a shaila depending on what if it was in fact shem Hashem and how bad the negiya is. We don't have time to go into all the halachos exactly right now. There is one mitigating factor, which is that so normally we assume that that's a complete psul, that if two letters are touching, then it's a problem. But if you have something like this, so let's say you have the word artsefar or something like that, so you have this, and then you have the tzadi touching there in the middle, so at the time, so you have an endachaf right here, and the touching only happened when the sofer was writing already halfway down the endachaf, and then it was just this that was written after the letters were touching. So then, if you have a situation like that, so if you're on Shabbos and you can't take a razor and erase it, so then you wouldn't have to take out a new Sefer Torah because there's a sheet of the Rashba, supposedly. This would in fact be kosher because this letter was written bekashrus until the Negiah actually happened. So the letters didn't actually touch until this was already a kosher endachaf. And therefore, that would not be a problem. Again, we don't really pass it like that, so really you should take a razor blade. You should get you should order blades online or wherever you can get the surgical blades. This is part of your arsenal, including pens like this. You have to get surgical blades that you can use to erase things in the Sefer Torah. When normally we think about writing in the Sefer Torah, not erasing, but certain times, like I said, when two letters are touching, then they have to be erased. The only problem is when you have two letters that are touching and they can look like another letter, then sometimes erasing between them could be a problem of chak tochos. That the halacha, as again mentioned in Gittin, is that your letter has to be written in the manner of writing. So it can't be, the kashrus of the letter cannot be created in a manner of erasing. So let's say you have two zions like this. Two zions, okay, very many zions, and there's a little touching over here. So that now looks like a ches. So then if you're taking the razor and you're erasing that connection between the two zions, so now you've turned it from a ches into two zions by way of erasing, so that would be a problem. In such a case, you'd have to erase, again, assuming it's not a shem, then you might have serious problems. But in the case of two zions like this, you have to erase the entire thing and make sure that it's written in the zions are actually written in the manner of writing rather than in the manner of erasing. Yeah?
Both of the zions you have to erase, or just one of them?
You have to erase both of them. Yeah. Because if you erase, in other words, you're creating the zion by eliminating that. So in other words, that would be, this zion now would be created by Chaktofos as well. Yeah?
Could you erase enough that it becomes illegible as that letter and then just fill it in?
There are different sheetahs about exactly how much of the letter you have to erase in different types of situations. But in general, we would try to be machmir to erase as much as possible. If you can't, then you would have to, again, we don't have time to go into every single detail right now, but ordinarily you would try to erase as much as possible, yeah?
What do you mean eraser? Like a bleed?
Like you use for a scalpel. So there's a scalpel handle, and then you have blades that you can attach to the end of the scalpel. You use for surgery.
Oh, so then you scratch out the ink?
You scratch off the ink. You can't just take a pencil eraser and erase it. That's not going to do anything.
Yeah, is there a feel like you'll go through the same thing, or you'll go through the parchment, or anything
after it? You could, but hopefully you won't. You'll be gentle.
Right.
If you create holes, that could also be a problem of mukaf kavel. Yeah? Do you need a sofer? If you have one in your community easily accessible, it's going to look nicer if you have a sofer. But if you're a knowledgeable rabbi, you know the halacha, so to write one letter like this should not be a problem. You can even draw it using one of these pens. Again, if you have time before your career at rabbinical school is over, then you could certainly a worthwhile skill to learn how to use an actual scribal pen. Either a quill, or they have actually metal pens cut in the same style as quills, that it's probably be easier for you to use. So if you're in the middle of laning on a weekday, and you and the rabbi are present, and you've done what I told you, and you keep a razor blade and a pen like this in your pocket at all times, so if you find a psul in the Sefer Torah during laning on weekdays, then you're not going to have too many problems. Most of the time, hopefully, you'll be able to correct the mistake on the spot. You can just continue laning. The problem is, what happens when you find the problem on Shabbos? Then there's not really that much you can do. So the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Kuf Mem Gimel brings a general rule which goes basically as follows. Every time you find a mistake in the Sefer Torah, it could be potentially subject to the rule of Svek Sveika. So why is it a Svek Sveika? Because it may just be one Sefek, it may be a Svek Sveika. Everybody knows the famous sheet of the Rambam in a Tshuva, which may or be contradicted in Mishnah Torah, that the Sefer Torah that is read from in public does not necessarily have to be a Sefer Torah that is kosher with all the halachos, for example, for the mitzvahs ksiva Sefer Torah, which hopefully everyone will have an opportunity to fulfill one day. But it doesn't have to be an absolutely kosher al-pidin Sefer Torah in order to recite the brachos and read from it in public. Now, this is not real. The sheet is not really accepted, more or less. Although, it's just interesting to note that the Rambam in this tshuva is actually not talking about a Sefer Torah that has a problem with the way one of the letters looks. The Rambam is actually talking about a Sefer Torah that's in fact written on parchment, which is what we'd call most of us write a Sefer Torah on nowadays. Because Rambam held that actually parchment was not kosher, and he actually needed to write a Sefer Torah on leather or something tanned in a similar way. According to the Rambam, all our Sefer Torah are essentially puzzle, so we don't need to, that's basically what his tshuva is about, so we rely on him anyway. But according to normative psak, we don't really rely on this Rambam, except in the context, because we hold our Sefer Torah, our kosher, hopefully. So then we need to come into the principle of Svek Sveika. The Svek Sveika would be, if you have a situation where the letter is absolutely puzzle, there's nothing to talk about, then you would only have the one suffix, which is the sheet of the Rambam, and therefore you would have to put back the Sefer Torah, something we ordinarily try not to do because it's considered to be problematic to the covet of the Sefer Torah because it's not nice to just put a Sefer Torah back in the Arun. Sefer Torah is supposed to be read from, not supposed to be sitting in the Arun as much as possible. So that would be for example, if two letters are touching each other in a manner that's for sure puzzle, so if there's nothing to talk about, you have to put back the Sefer Torah. Or if Vav is too short and it for sure looks like a Yud, so there's nothing to talk about, you have to put back the Sefer Torah. The question is, when the psul that you're looking at or is actually subject to a machlokas between the poskim, then you would not need to put back the Sefer Torah because of the Svek Sveika, because maybe the halacha is not like the Rambam. Even if the halacha is not like the Rambam, that Pasul Sefer Torah is not allowed to be read from a public, nevertheless, maybe the Posek who's makshir this particular tzura, this particular problem in the Sefer Torah, is correct, and therefore you would not need to put it back. In other words, the only thing that you really need to put back in terms of a Sefer Torah on Shabbos is something that's absolutely puzzle according to all shittas, more or less. Maybe if there's one shita that's completely rejected and that all the posts can say is completely wrong, then maybe you still have to put it back. But if there's a normative shita that allows it, then you would not have to put back the Sefer Torah on Shabbos. Another saving grace when it comes to these types of things is a tinok. When you have a letter that may look like another letter, then you have to ask what's called a shelas tinok. So shelas tinok is normally used by tefillin and mezuzahs because tefillin and mezuzahs have halacha where they have to be written kesidron. Each letter has to be written in order. So if you find a letter that's puzzle in the middle of the tefillin or the Sefer Torah, then you have to get rid of the entire batch of tefillin or the entire mezuzah, at least if there's no possibility of erasing after that point. So if you find a letter that's puzzle that might be puzzle in the middle of a mezuzah or tefillin, then you're going to ask a little kid to read it, and if he can read it correctly, in most cases, the tefillin or mezuzah are saved, and you would not have to do that. So in a Sefer Torah, the shelas tinok is not used very much because the Sefer Torah doesn't have this halacha of shelas kesidron, so therefore you can just fix it. But again, we're talking about Shabbos. So if you happen to have little kids in your congregation, then you're going to rely on them in order to be machshir the letter. So what age are we talking about when we say a shelas tinok? So we're talking basically first or second grade in contemporary terminology. It's basically someone who knows Aleph Beis perfectly, who if you showed him or her a endomem and a samech, they would consistently absolutely know the difference. They wouldn't still be learning it, and that's worthless, obviously. It has to be a tinok that knows all the letters, but does not know how to read, I wouldn't say words, because the Gemara, when it mentions Shalos Tinuk, is talking about the Tinuk reading the word, but doesn't know how to interpret and analyze what he or she is reading. So it has to be, so that's not, in other words, they're not going to be misled by what the context of what's going on in this Parsha in the Sefer Torah. That's what's called a Tinuk de lo chakim velo tipish. A Tinuk who's neither too smart nor too dumb. And if there's a obviously, so it has to be someone who basically fits that bill. There's a story once that somebody was asking, there was a shaylon in a mezuzah about the word vishinantam in the mezuzah. So the last mem in vishinantam was a little bit rounded. It looked maybe like a samech. So they asked the first or second grader, they said, what is this letter in vishinantam? So the Tinuk said, It's an endomem, it's a mem. So they said, how do you know that? So the Tinuk answers, there's no samech in Parsha Shema. So that's a Tinuk chacham. You're not allowed to ask such a Tinuk questions of this nature. It has to be purely based on their knowledge of the letters. Yeah.
So you have to ask a follow-up question, how did you know that?
No, you don't have to. That just happened in that one case. And the nice thing about Shaylos Tinuk, which is that once you ask the Tinuk, you don't have to ask another one. So if the Tinuk is Machshir, then you can be happy. You don't have to be worried that maybe the Tinuk made a mistake. If the Tinuk is Posel, then you have a problem on your hands. If it so happened that you asked more than one Tinuk, which you're really not supposed to do, then you go by the majority, by the Rov. Yeah?
Yeah, but you shouldn't have then asked, or whoever was asking the question, shouldn't have asked, how do you know that? You shouldn't.
In terms of the hanhoga of a Shaylos Tinuk, you're right, but it's still a cute story. Yeah.
If you do have to send the Sefer Torah back, why do you not have to start delaying again? Why are you doing this?
Because we're not sure, we're not 100% sure about the kashrus of any of our Sefer Torah. That's why the Rambam has this compromise shita in Shulchan Aruch that you don't have to start delaying again.
Would that apply to people also? Like if somebody goes to Hagun. Sorry, I know this is a little bit off topic.
Yeah.
But that point, if somebody wasn't Hagun because of Shailan, his youthless or something like that, was gotten Aliyah, would you not have to start again because we all have similar, or a subject to some degree with other people?
Well, what do you mean?
Meaning we have a potential problem with this sacred Torah, and so we're taking it back. So let's say you have potential problems with somebody
gotten Aliyah. How bad are you talking? You're going to discover right on Shabbos that the person had a problem? I mean, what do you mean? How bad is the child?
Doesn't know somebody walks into shul,
you find out his mamish not Jewish or something? What do you mean?
Like, you're not sure. It seems like, I mean, you don't go up to him and ask, but something comes up and there's a kasha on his yichlis during minyan, and you don't want to embarrass him by asking him out, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't think you would that. Whether you have to add an extra aliyah, it's a good question. I mean, the same idea wouldn't apply to people because we normally assume that most Jews who have a cheskes kashrus are for sure kashra yichus. What? Not exactly. I mean, okay. We know the Teimani Sifrei Torah, for example, have nine. I'm sure you learned in the intro to the Bible have nine differences from the Ashkenazi and Sephardi Sifrei Torah. So every Sifrei Torah, we can see, with our eyes that there are slight differences. The Gemara already talks about how we're not Bucky and Chaseros Viseros.
Let me just ask about the Shilas Tinuk.
Yeah.
At what point is it not appropriate to ask Tinuk anymore because the problem is so obvious? Let's say you're talking about the length of a vav, let's say, or length of a nun. So, you look at it and say, this is just too short, this vav. Or do you ask the Tinuk?
The whole institution of Shilas Tinuk is when you, the Godel, are not sure, or the person, knowledgeable Jew is not sure about the length. But if you're sure, so you don't need to ask a Tinuk. If you have this, and the Tinuk says Chaf, that's impossible to say for Torah. Shailos Tinuk is only Chal when you have a Suffolk.
Right, you have a Suffolk, but something for you might be a Suffolk. In other words, you have a suffix about what the tinuk is going to say, or you have a suffix about, you know, you know what I'm saying? You know, like you showed that base over there. You said there was a little crack in the base.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So, the question is, so you said for sure that's kasha because you know what the tinuk is going to say?
Well, here you have a reisa. Here you don't, you're not sure what the tinuk is going to say. Maybe the crack, maybe you can fill in, here you have a reisa, so you ask a shelas tinuk. So you have a suffix in your head because of the issue of the crack. In other words, you know this is a base because you're prejudiced. Because you know this is a base, you can tell that this is a crack. Maybe
right.
The Tinov doesn't know that it's, he's not going to, maybe he's going to look at it, he's not going to know what letter it is.
So if there's a tiny crack, my question is, if there's a tiny crack and your mind puts it all together and you see a base,
yeah.
You still need to ask the Tinov.
If it's a very minor, tiny crack and there's really not a question that Tinov could recognize it as a base, no need to ask a Tinov. But if it's a more substantial
crack,
so then
the suffix goes away when you're sure what the Tinov is going to say.
Yeah, if there's no doubt in your mind what the Tinov would say, then yeah. Basically, essentially, yeah. Also, there's a common misconception about Shaylas Tinok, which is that you have to cover all the rest of the letters, so the Tinok should just be looking at this one letter and be able to tell you what it is. That is not true, that it's completely fine to leave all the letters uncovered. It's also a wise idea to test the Tinok before, just to make sure that you and the Tinok are on the same page, just to show him or her different letters in the Sefer Torah that are for sure, okay, what's this, what's this, what's this, and random letters. Again, if you're looking for the answer of Zion, for example, and you say, what's this letter, Zion, what's this letter, Zion, what's this letter, Zion, then you show the suffix, you know, that you want him to say Zion, he says Zion, just because that's what you asked him all about before, that's obviously not okay. But ask him about many different letters, and then you can ask him about that one letter, yeah?
So during on a weekday, you said that you try and fix it right away. Let's say it will take like 5 minutes. Can you wait until the end of the lane, or you have to fix it right away?
That's a good question. I mean, Tircha de Tzibura. Question, what trumps over here? The Tircha de Tzibura or the Kavod of the Sefer Torah?
It will take like a few minutes at least, probably, right before you realize.
Well, if it's a little crack and you have a pen in your pocket, then you can go over.
Right. It's like, I don't know, like you have to erase something.
If it's going to take a substantial amount of time where you assess that it's going to be real Tircha de Tzibur, I would imagine that you put it back. I'm not 100% sure.
I would think that Tircha de Tzibur does trump it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would think so.
It's a good question, though.
Yeah, it's a good question.
What's a Tircha de Tzibur on a weekday?
Not too much time.
And people are going to work.
A very short amount of time is turned this for already.
The whole davening is like half an hour, if then you get like 5 seconds.
Yeah, but it was just a matter of the rabbi, you know, going from the front with a pen to go over the Sefer Torah to make a tiny mark, so I would imagine that that's...
The first time you do it, you're not going to be that comfortable, and it's going to take you more time than you think, because you're going to be extremely careful. If you've done it a few times, you're going to be a little bit more careful, it's going to go a little bit quicker, but you're not going to be that comfortable doing it quickly the first time.
As someone once told a friend of mine who was also learning Sapphiros is not for people with nerven. If you're nervous and you're, for example, that you can't stomach the idea of writing Shem Hashem, or that you can't stomach the idea of putting any ink in contact with the Sefer Torah, so Sapphiros is not for you. You have to just do it. Gotta jump in. So let's go now to specific letters that you might have issues with when it comes to laning on Shabbos. Let's start with Aleph. We have a letter Aleph, which normally looks something like this. I'm writing small, so you get somewhat of the proportion of a regular Aleph, although that's it's not exactly right. So, we already discussed what happened if there's a break in the letter. So if it's something like that, and it's clearly still recognizable as an Aleph, so it's subject to the rules that we learned before. You will have some issues sometimes in Old Sefer Torah that you have the top right thing of the Aleph not like a straight yud like that, but it's going to look like a backwards yud. So this was a very common thing in older style Stam, and of course you're going to find poskim nowadays who say that it's puzzle. Absolutely, you might have to go back and say for Torah on Shabbos, but that's not the normally accepted approach. That doesn't really matter whether this thing is backwards or forwards as a yud, it's still going to be kosher. Another problem is what's called a kav poshut, which means, of course, a straight line, which means that instead of the aleph curving nicely, that the two ivarim here on the top right and bottom left
of the Aleph curving nicely, they're going to be straight lines. And that mostly happens because it used to be normal. It used to have a thing sticking out of it, and then somehow this sofer slipped, and this part got filled in with ink, so it ends up being a straight line. So this is normally assumed to be puzzle, although if you look in the first tshuva in Mishnah Rebaron by Rebaron Cutler, he suggests maybe it's not so pashut. Certainly according to many Rishonim, it's not at all pashut that way puzzle, but according to normative psak, so when these things are kav pashut, when they're just straight lines, so that is going to be a puzzle that should definitely be fixed. But if you find it in the Sefer Torah on Shabbos, that'll be subject to the rule of Svek Sveka, because the Rishitas that hold that it's kosher, therefore you would not take out a new Sefer Torah for such a thing on Shabbos. The same thing would apply, of course, to any other letter that where it normally has curvy parts to it. So like Shin, if this ended up being a straight line, or this was a straight line, etc., that would be assumed to be not a problem, at least on Shabbos, when you have no other choice. Yeah?
Is there like a Safras equivalent of Shneira Shabbos Gehilchata that could be like available to the Rav?
There's a Sefer called Sefer Torah Shin Tzibotos, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really use it because I make my own Cheshbonos about what's going to be a problem.
You should have that Sefer. Sefer Torah Shin Tzibotos by Rav Steiner is a book you should have next to you.
Right.
Sefer Torah Shin Tzibotos.
I mean, I looked in there a little bit. I disagreed with a lot of things he said, so I personally don't use it, but...
For you,
it'll be good. But you write one and then sell it.
I sure, okay.
No, that's extremely, it's extremely handy. That's a good thing. Even though there are going to be a lot of shittas about a lot of things, but it's very handy.
Now we're going on to Beis.
Beis, the major problem with a Beis is that it's going to be looking like a chaf. And that could happen when you have this thing that sticks out on the bottom missing. So it's just sort of square like that. So the Mishnah Berurah holds that this is kosher. There are other poskim that hold that this is absolutely possible. If there's nothing sticking out on the bottom right, then it's going to be absolutely invalid. But, like I said, because it would be subject to a Svek Sveka, you wouldn't take out a new Sefer Torah on Shabbos. But if it's square on the bottom and nothing's sticking out and round on the top, then that's going to be all these types of scenarios... are really going to be a shelas tinok. You're going to have to ask a kid whether it looks like a beis or a chaf.
It's kosher because it's squared at the top. That's why
the square on the top is a mitigating factor. The main indicator as to whether it's a beis or a chaf actually goes by the bottom. In many old tzavim, especially Sephardi tzavim, you're actually going to have a beis be pretty rounded on the top. And in Mishnah Berurah again doesn't like it. He thinks it should be round. A lot of Ashkenazi posts can feel that it should be square both on the bottom and on the top, with the thing sticking out on the bottom. But in old Sephardic oven, you're going to have it rounded on the top, and so for sure, I mean, again, if you want, you're going to have to use your own judgment of whether you want to fix it or not. If you find that in your Sefer Torah, and you're sure you have a lot of round basim on the top, but nevertheless, if you find it on Shabbos, it for sure wouldn't be a problem. Again, I personally probably would not fix that because that's a part of the old style, and I like old styles, but you have to use your rabbinical judgment for that. There's also a little tag most of the time on a base. It's really supposed to be on the end of the letter, but a lot of times you'll find it indented a little bit, and that's basically nothing. If that's missing, it's not a problem at all. If it's on a weekday and you want to put it back in, so again, if you have a lot of free time on your hands, so go ahead. But that would not be a problem at all, even to take out the Sefer Torah to read from Lechatchila. The same tag is found on Dalet, sometimes on Yud, sometimes, especially in Sfarim, they not only have this little pointy thing on the end, which I'll explain a little bit more about later, but they have another tag in the middle like that, which again creates a lot of problems because a Yud is a small letter, so the more things you have sticking out of it, the more it's not going to look like a Yud anymore. But in any event, it's also found on Kuf. It's also found and Hey. So it's called the Tagim of Bedika because it's found on these letters. Again, these are completely just ideas. L'chatkila, it's not a problem at all halachically if it's missing. There's a tag on the Ches also, which has a sort of a different nature. That's why it's sometimes called the Tagim of Bedek Chai instead of Tagim of Bedika. But that's really a different makor for that. That's why I personally don't like to include it with the Tagim of Bedika. But you'll find it written that you'll find people talk about the Tagim of Bedek Chaya as if Ches were part of the category.
The Tagim of, on the other hand, on the Gimel and other letters are a little bit more problematic. So the Gimel, just because next in the alphabet, so I'm going to talk about the Gimel. So the Gimel has three Tagim on top, not just one, and that's part of the set of letters which are called Sha'atnez Gates. And all those letters are supposed to have three Tagim on the top. So there is a big shiloh in the postgame about whether these Tagim are ma'akiv or not. Again, Svek Sveika, you wouldn't take out a new Sefer Torah on Shabbos for it, but really those should be fixed if at all possible. There is a major Shita Rishonim, which is known as the Shita of the Yoreim, and it might probably be Shita of Rashi and many Rishonim as well, that the whole thing about the three Tagim on top is really not correct. That really what it means is that the corner, that the three, that there's supposed to be three corners on the head. So it's supposed to look like this. And in terms of the old style of Ksav, a lot of times you'll find these head to be diamond shaped and have three corners instead of three sticks sticking out of the top. And again, if you find a sefer that has just every Shaimas Getz letter have three corners like that instead of three tagim on the top, so you should probably investigate its value and keep it in a safe because it's probably very, very old. But I definitely wouldn't add them if you found a Sefer Torah that's actually written like that, which is a very, very old style. In any event, if the head is flat like this, so it still should have at least three corners. The way we write the heads nowadays, it has four corners. We can discuss whether that's really right or not. But in any event, it should definitely have corners on the head. It definitely shouldn't be like rounded like that. Sometimes you'll find like a corner to be blurred or something like that. That's really not correct. The head should definitely still have corners, as well as normally the way we paskin, it should have three stick-like thingies coming out of the top that we call tagim. So again, those are much more stringent in their halacha than the tagim of bedika, but again, if they happen to be missing on Shabbos, then you would not take out a new sefer Torah for it. And if you have no other choice, would even allow you to take out that sefer Torah to read lechatchila. Now we get to, again, we discussed before what would happen if there was a break between the regular of the Gimel and the Zion part of the Gimel. That could be more stringent than a normal break. Now we get to Dalet. The main problem with Dalet is you'd be confused with Resh. So, how would you read that?
The Yud
first. No, it's not even. Imagine.
Well,
it's clearly either a Dalet or a Resh. Which is it? So if you have something, you think it's a Resh. So the Mishnah Berurah thinks it's a Dalet, but many other poskim, in fact, do think it's a Resh. But if you have something that's in the middle, if it's just a tiny bit rounded, then that would definitely be a Shailas Tinok, whether that would be a Resh or a Dalet. If it's mamish square, according to the Mishnah Berurah, it would be a Dalet. So again, I wouldn't take out necessarily a new Sefer Torah for that. At least you wouldn't. Maybe I would. I'm not. Because it's very questionable whether that's in fact true. According to many poskim, it does in fact have to have something sticking out either this way or that way in order to be considered to be a dalet. So if it's but if it's somewhere in between, then that would require a shailas tinok. But on a weekday, of course, it should be fixed. So there's no question whatsoever what type of letter that in fact is. We have another halacha which applies to any to many letters that have different parts to them. So you have a dalet like this. So let's say you have a hole, you have a crack like that. Actually, that was not a good example. Let's say you have a crack like this. So what are you going to tell me based on the rules that we were discussing before? That's going to be probably kosher, because it's clearly still recognizable as a dalet. But unfortunately, we have a mitigating factor over here that calls the kashrus of this letter into a very major question, that maybe even a tinok wouldn't work, which is that when you have a letter like this that has a part sticking down, a regal sticking down, so this, the Gemara says that this needs to be a shear of a melo'os ktana, which means, what's a small letter? A yud. The smallest letter is a yud, so it needs to have at least the shear of a yud in this part over here, then otherwise it's going to be a problem if, in fact, there is a crack at that point. Now, this actually happened in my shul just this past Shabbos, that there was a resh that, unless you tell me it's not common, there was a resh that was something like this,
and it was cut off over here. It was clearly absolutely erased, but nevertheless, I made them put back the Sefer Torah because they didn't have a yud, the shear of a yud, in that part right there sticking down. Hey.
The Malo'os Katana would have to be on the part that's sticking down from the reish?
Correct. It has to be... It starts at the bottom of the gan. So if you have a little bit more proportional reish that looks like that, so it would have to be, assuming about this is a Malo'os Katana, then it would have to be, this would be another Malo'os Katana, and with the crack would have to be below this point, starting from the bottom of the gag. Right. If you write a Sefer Torah like this, that's no good. That's not Ksav Ashuris. That's rule number one of Sefer Torah. But anyway, fine. So hey is going to have a few problems associated with it. So hey, if it's rounded like this, like a reish, it's really supposed to look like this, like a dalet. It's still okay if it's a reish. It's not as important as, of course, it was supposed to be a dalet. Then that would be a problem because here you have this little thing in here that clearly indicates that it's a hey and not a reish or a dalet or anything of that nature. This regal, there's actually a shaila. This about this part. The regal in here, the inside regal, whether that has to be a Malo'os Katana or not, and we normally try to be choshish that it certainly does, but if it doesn't, again, you wouldn't have to put back a Sefer Torah for that because of the sheet of the rush that the inner regal doesn't have to be a Malo'os Katana. Yeah?
I'll ask it later.
Okay. Fine. There is a major problem, actually, that happens in Hayes, especially in contemporary Sefer Torah, that you should be aware of, which is that, what's the basic tzura of a hay? The basic tzura of a hay looks like this. It's like this, and then there's a line like that. Right? That's how, if you're writing block Hebrew letters, that's how you would write a hay. So according to the medieval Ashkenazi svarim about tzura sosios, this, according to Kabbalah, this thing right here is supposed to look sort of like a yud. What did they mean by that? That it's supposed to look, that it's basically a straight line, but they wanted you to curve it a little bit, like that, so it should be merames to the Kabbalistic secrets involved in a yud. But some from nowadays have taken this concept very overboard, and what they do, they make hays like this. They make a hay like that, and then they make the regal mamish like an upside down yud, which is not what they had in mind at all, but nevertheless, that's how many Sofrim write the hay nowadays. Now, the problem with this is that Sofrim have gone so overboard, even starting with this thing, that they barely write this part. A lot of times, it's going to be almost flat, like that, which is really not correct, because the basic tzura of a hay, as the Gemara says, is like an achsadra. It's like three walls. So, if you have this, it's like three walls. One, two, three. But here, this is different contemporary posts can treat this type of shaila with different degrees of severity. I think it's a major problem that a lot of hays are written like this nowadays. So if you have a haze like that in your Sefer Torah, they should ideally be fixed. But again, since technically there's no shear to this, it just sort of has to look like a hay, then you definitely wouldn't take out a new Sefer Torah on Shabbos if it looked like that. There is another problem, actually, that I'll mention, which is Alpi Kabbalah, especially many Sephardi Sofrim in Shem Hashem, they write the letters in a little bit of a funky manner. So they'll write a hey that, especially in Sephardi Sefer Torah, you'll see that they look like that, and they make a little protrusion like that. So a lot of them have gone overboard, and now they make it look like that. Something like that. So that, my friends, is not a kosher hey. That may, in fact, be a kosher tuff. That's also something that you have to look out for when you, especially when you're dealing with Sephardi Sefer Torah, which even a lot of Ashkenazi shuls have, because they're cheaper, because the Ksav is written in a more simple manner, then that's something you definitely have to look out for. Yeah?
Speaking to that point, so because of the different, like, Misoras, like, Kushukha and things like that, like, can...
Tzedakah?
Yeah. If someone wants to donate a Sephardi Sefer Torah to an Ashkenazi shul, like that's...
Well, actually, it's funny, because nowadays we Ashkenazim write Psuadaka with a hey, which comes from the Sephardim, actually. The original Ashkenazi Mesor was to write Psuadaka with an Aleph. So that's not... nowadays we write Psuadaka with a hey anyway, like the Sephardim, so that's not an issue.
Are there other things...
In terms of spelling, no. In terms of the style of the letters, then you have different postgame who take the requirement
or the preference for Ashkenazi ksav more seriously than others.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of times since it's cheaper, so that's what you're going to find the donor for. I mean, in my personal opinion, I don't feel that the difference between Ashkenazi and Sephardi ksav is particularly significant, but we'll discuss that a little bit more when we get to the letter Tzadi, which might not be today, but we'll see. Now, the next letter is possibly the most problematic letter in all of the Hebrew alphabet. And it's made all the worse because it's such a common one, which is the letter Vav. So, you take the letter Vav. Sorry for writing so small, but it's have to maintain some sort of proportion over here. So you have the letter Vav. You make it too wide, you turn it into a Resh. You make it too short, you turn it into a Yud. You make it too long, you turn it into an endonym. You make it too square on top, I'm sorry, you turn it even worse into an endonym. And if you make it shorter and square on top, you turn it into a Zion. That actually would be a kosher endonym, that one right there, but we'll call it a Zion for now. So the Vav is in fact extremely, extremely problematic. It's probably one of the letters that's most asked Shailas Tinok about that letter, is the letter Vav. And you have to be very on top of that, because it can easily become puzzle, especially if you're an amateur sofer and you're trying to make corrections to a Vav. So if you put too much ink on top, it's going to turn into a Resh, etc., etc., etc. There is a machala amongst contemporary soferim that they are so nervous that they're going to turn a Vav into an endonym if they make it too long, that they make Vavin very short. If you'll notice in a lot of contemporary stam, which is an even worse shaila, because Vav is much more likely to look like a Yud if it's too short than it is to look like an endonym if it's too long. So in my career, one of the most common corrections that I make in all type of stam is actually to lengthen the Vav. The letter Zion is also an interesting letter, that in the ksav of the Sefer Torah, the only difference between a Zion and an endonym is the length. That you're used to in print seeing an endonym like this, sort of coming down from the side, but in Sefer Torah ksav is actually a long Zion. So you have the same problem by a Zion, that if you make it too long, it might easily become a kosher endonym. The poskim actually write that if you make the Zion too short, it could turn into a Yud as well, but that's not too common in contemporary stam, because nowadays, again, the Sofrim have invented their own nice styles. They make the Zion with a nice, fat, square head, and the regal right in the middle of the Zion, so that's not going to look like a Yud, really, if you make it too short. In the Orgel style, remember I told you by the Gimel that the corner just had, the heads just had three corners. The Zion used to look something like this. It's not exactly right, but it used to look something like that, not as artificial looking, but it used to look something like that, so it's understandable that if you made it too short, it could start, well, imagine this being filled in a little bit more, it could end up looking more like you, but that's not really a concern too much anymore, although it can happen with relative ease, yeah?
If a Vav or Zion is in the middle of a word,
yeah.
Is there ever a hashash that it's going to be an end of none?
Some poskim, when you're asking a Shailas Tinok, or trying to decide whether you need to ask a Shailas Tinok, so some poskim will be mitzar of the fact that the letter is in the middle of the word. So let's say, I don't know, you have the word gvul, something like that, and this vav is really long. So if it's this long, so that's not a shaila. But if it's something that's on the, it's for sure puzzle. But if you have something that's sort of on the border, maybe something like that, so different posts can have different approaches to how stringent, how you might be more makel based on the fact that it's clearly in the middle of the word, so there's no way it could possibly be an endonym. Other posts can say that the letter has to have independently the correct surah, and not, it doesn't matter what position in the word it in fact would be. Mezuzahs also, you have a lot of times when you have, I mean the word mezuzah, not mezuzahs. So, same thing. If you have this, so it looks like mazanos or something, and that would be, this would be subject to the same issue. Fine. So next letter, which is
what? There's another suffix in there. In other words,
what?
Svek sveka, and then there's another suffix about which way to pass it on that.
So this would be another suffix in Akanami, that if you're going, if it's on Shabbos and you find this in the Sefer Torah, then there'll be another reason to not to take out a Sefer, that's correct. But if it's too long, if it's this long, then there's nothing to talk about. We're talking about Gvuli types of situations, not when it's clear-cut. The letter Ches is one of my favorite letters, actually, because there are many, we'll wrap up in a few minutes, but there are many different ways of writing it. You'll notice that, of course, in printing, Ches is written like this, and in Sefer Torah, Ches is written like this, like two Zions with a little hat. The reason for that is based on machlokes between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam in Menachos, supposedly. Whether that's really what Rabbeinu Tam says is somewhat questionable, but the assumption is that Rashi holds that Ches is supposed to be written like we normally are familiar with it from printing. Rabbeinu Tam holds that it's supposed to be written by like two Zions with a hat based on a sugya in Shabbos. Again, if you find a Ches that's written like this, it's for sure kosher. This is for sure, even to write it this way, according to those they hold as it's supposed to be written this way, it's also one of the suffering dafkani things that we mentioned before in Menachos, when it talks about the sofrim who used to be extra makbid in writing in a fancy, more modern manner, used to write it this way. But this is definitely kosher, even if you find the flat Ches in Sefer Torah, just with a regular flat roof like that. Now, this also can cause a lot of problems, because this also just happened to me in my shul a few weeks ago, that sometimes you'll have a little, let's say you have a little break in the little hat, and that could easily look like two Zions and not a Ches. In fact, the Tinok, the Shulchan Aruch already writes that if a Tinok reads this, even a fully formed hat Ches, as two Zions, so we ignore the Tinok because he's just not familiar with the fact that a Ches could be written this way. But if there's any reis on the test, that there's something missing right there, then you have a serious problem that this would be two zines. It's just a tiny break, so there might be more room to bakel, even though some posts can be machmer, because it's not actually touching, so it could be kosher as two zines. But if like one of the parts of the hat is completely missing like that, then there's really nothing to talk about. That would be, in fact, that would be complete puzzle, and I sent back a Sefer Torah on Shabbos for that exact reason just a few weeks ago. So I think we'll stop here for today, and we'll continue next week.
How often does this happen? I mean,
if you have old Sefer Torah in the shul, it happens very often. Yeah.
The shop has like a whole excursus on Sfek Sveika and Yoradea.
Okay.
And
yeah.
Towards the end, he kind of discourages you from engaging in it in almost any Indian. I'll bring in the shop for next time. But how confident can we be with regards to Sfek Sveika, when we don't have expertise in Safras and we encounter these problems? Do you encourage us?
You have to know what's a Saf, what's a Machlokes HaPoskim and what's not. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Do you think because you this is your area of expertise, therefore your congregants find more, or they like?
Oh, absolutely.
More, you know, like, oh, it's a tiny little.
I possibly say, on the other hand, I'm actually, like I said about your, on the one hand, I possibly more because I catch things more, but on the other hand, since. Sometimes I'm yeah. So the like if the Sefer Torah Shnimtzeis Botos Sefer, so I'm like I said, I found things in there that I disagree with because I'm much more makel because that's my understanding of the sugya. So I'm saying it goes both ways.